Hi guys, and welcome to the Rugby Abroad podcast again for episode 22, this time with Willy Colify, Tongan international, second row slash back rower. Finished his playing career a few years back now, but he's the creator of the massive Pacific Juice Instagram account with over 60,000 followers now and counting. Hope you enjoy the episode. If you can, give us a like and a follow on YouTube or whatever platform you're listening to the podcast. It would really help us out. Don't forget, early Christmas presents are available at rugbyabroad.com/shop. Wow, so welcome to episode 22 of the Rugby Abroad podcast. Absolute pleasure to be here today with Willy Colify. Mate, welcome. Thanks for making some time. I know you're a busy man. This has been a long time coming, I think. How are you?
No, I'm good, Kitty. It's good to finally have this, be able to connect. I know we've sort of misfired on schedule wise, but no, good to be here, bro. Good to connect with you again, eh?
Yeah, awesome, man. Look, first, I saw a couple of tweets and I watched the game myself in the last couple of days, Spain against Tonga. Massive, massive result. I've been following both sides quite frequently. Spain is probably their worst result in recent times. Massive, massive loss to Tonga. I know you're of course, an ex-Tongan international superstar, let's say. And Tonga looking good going into World Cup year for 2023. What are your thoughts on that kind of performance? Sets the stall up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously they had a pretty disappointing Pacific Nations with all the hype around sort of Fekitoa, Piutaufolau, but obviously they've just had it added by Fifito, George Mwala. So I thought it was probably obviously our best performance this past year. And I was a bit surprised at the result from Spain, because I know that, you know, I wasn't discounting Spain at any in any way, and I was expecting that they'd be a little bit more here. But I mean, I don't think Tonga really ran away with it. It was sort of, they were just sort of grinding out tries. They were kind of, so it wasn't really sort of, you know, splitting them open as you might imagine. But good on Spain. But I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I guess a bit, almost a shame for Spain. They've been causing some upsets and getting some like big results against some bigger nations. I think they got up at one point last year into the top 20 in World Rugby's rankings. And just watching the game, they just got absolutely dominated at set piece. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights or the game itself, but oh my God, at scrum time, obviously the Tongan pack weighs quite a lot more than the Spanish one. But that's not to say they hadn't played recently against Fiji, Italy, some other big rugby playing nations. So I don't know what happened. It's probably a hangover off the recent dramas in Spanish rugby with the change of federation, maybe the start of a new era for them. A lot of the same players though, don't get me wrong, but a few boys have retired. So I don't know, man. Great work from Tonga, to be honest. They look good in there. And a few guys that kind of are taking advantage of the new World Rugby law to come and play for Tonga after having represented other nations. Can you shed some light on how that works? I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah, so it's just recently been sort of end of last year, November, they saw that the eligibility changed for players that were playing for sort of other, you know, you could have, there was a stand down period of 3 years. As soon as you fulfilled that sort of stand down period, then you could go ahead and make yourself available for a country that had sort of, you know, you weren't just willy nilly, but sort of had a real relevance, you know, to your heritage, etc., parents. A lot of, obviously we saw there's a lot of guys that have made that shift. And I think Tonga is one of the teams that have had that rule has sort of impacted the most, obviously some also, but so I think we're one of the beneficiaries of that ruling.
Yeah, how good. Nice to have some experience coming to the squad, especially in such an important year coming up. Willy, I don't know if you're aware of the Rugby Abroad podcast, but we are sort of renowned for talking to guys that have had some playing or coaching experiences abroad and really traveled the world with their rugby, and you are an absolute prime example of someone like that. like myself, we crossed paths in Jersey, the small island between England and France.
That's
Kind of
right.
a sliding doors moment. You were just finishing off your pro career at the time, and I was sort of starting out on my journey. Would love to hear kind of you take us through a little bit your story, how you ended up moving abroad in the first place and why, and then how you got to Jersey up to that
Yeah,
point.
no, for sure. No, it's, yeah, no, it's cool. All's cool, Jersey. I sort of, so obviously I used to play my footy in New Zealand, and I was sort of coming up through the ranks. And I think, I guess I had one of those seasons where I thought it was kind of a bit of a breakout season, with Otago. So I was playing locally in the NPC. I'm not too sure if people are familiar with that, sort of like the ITM NPC here in New Zealand. Had a good season with them, good couple of seasons, and I was sort of looking to push into that sort of next tier level, but sort of a bit of politics came into play. I mean, we always say the guys that are always sort of on the wrong side of the ledger always politics, but for me, I'd stand by that and say that a bit of politics came into play. I decided I didn't want to have anything to do with sort of sticking around here. I thought I'd chat to my agent, we'll sort of see if we can pick up something overseas. And then so I sort of initially I'd gone to Japan, and played a bit of footy there for the Coca-Cola Red Sparks. And initially I was a bit hesitant. I actually had another few options in Dunedin, in New Zealand with ITM. And my initial, there was a real initial hesitation about going abroad. And I was like, oh, it's a big deal. It's, heading away from family support. And I was almost, I had a wee love interest at the time. I was sort of leaving, and so that sort of made me think I wanted to sort of stick around in New Zealand. She's my wife now, so things, turned out okay with that. But then talking to Japan, and then after Japan, I sort of made my way up to Europe, and I was playing in Italy. Then I was in France. I was up in the UK, for Newcastle, and then I sort of. What happened? I'd gone to the World Cup with Tonga, that 2015 year. I had a few injuries going into the World Cup, so it was a bit touch and go. And I was kind of thinking, man, I think this might be me sort of. I think it might be time to hang up the boots. But then I obviously got a call from your favorite coach, Biljon, and then yeah, I ended up sort of. With like, oh, okay, Jersey, yeah, might be an option there. So I decided we'd come there and give that a shot, and then we ended up sort of staying there for a couple of years, and we sort of crossed paths. And really, I think it's funny because my wife says, of all the places that we've sort of been, she's really enjoyed her time at Jersey, and it's a beautiful spot, and I don't think many people know about Jersey and that, but no, I really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome story, man. Thanks for taking us through that. Yeah, Jersey is a hell of a spot, isn't it? It's like a kind of unknown rugby hub of the UK. I would put it like that. Not necessarily like a rugby culture where you're going to get the whole island come down to a game, but definitely got that typical English rugby culture, and it's just a beautiful little place. If you get a chance to visit, I'm sure we would both suggest getting down there,
Absolutely.
visiting some of those coves and beaches on Jersey Island. It's a great night out as well, isn't it? To be honest,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know that their second team's now playing in the national leagues. So teams that come over on the weekends to play them, they're sort of lining up like a mini tour. So they get over to Jersey, do a bit of traveling around the island. Head out after the game on Saturday night. I think it's great for the island, but it's always a good experience for a traveling rugby club, isn't it? At Jersey, that was always the
Absolutely. No,
case.
that's.
But also played against teams as well. When they came over there, they were like on in holiday mode and they couldn't quite switch on. So it was always
That's right.
that Jersey Stadium. It was always a tough place to go, wasn't it?
100%. 100%. No, it was. You're right. The guys were coming over the island because it was kind of sort of, flying into Jersey. That was on holiday mode. And we'd often catch teams still in that mode on the field. So, sort of worked to our advantage at times.
Yeah, awesome, man. So, Pacific Juice, I see you wearing the jumper or the sweater or the hoodie, however, whatever part of the world you're in, you call it a different thing. But that's your baby. That is, you're a bit of a social media mogul, let's say. How's that going? I know you're it's like a project, as if I can say myself, it seems to be a project that is really giving some boost to the Pacific rugby community, and really a really positive thing going forward. Do you use it to the community, or is that just a secondary positive effect of running a massive social media account?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about, for me, it definitely is about the community. And being able to sort of, you know, it's a page on Instagram that we sort of come in and celebrate, you know, Pacifica rugby players, Pacifica, our Pacifica teams. And it's definitely all about sort of bringing in the community and creating, you know, a sort of buzz around our Pacifica players. Mm.
Awesome. And how's it going? You're obviously up to about 60,000 followers. Is there aim to increase that following, or are you quite happy at where you're at, or are there any things in the works going forward to the future?
For sure. So we definitely, I've just had some chats with some guys over in Tonga. There's a guy I played rugby with, Edie Aholele. He runs a non-profit organization over there called Youth and Union. And obviously being Tongan and having played for Tonga is really close to my heart. So we're looking to partner with them. We've done bits and pieces with them in the past, sort of fundraisers, but it's something that we're looking to do and looking to use Pacific Juice as a vehicle to sort of really generate more sort of support, awareness, in a meaningful way. Because, you know, it's nice to have a bit of a following and buzz and sort of dialogue on the platform, but being able to, the next step for me is just being able to give back in sort of a meaningful way. Yeah,
awesome. I think this is like a bit of a common theme in guys that have managed to travel abroad to play their rugby professionally, is this giving back to the community that they came from, just in kind of like thanks and gratitude to everything it gave them. I'm certainly on a similar path and trying to start up some projects to help give back, help give guys the similar opportunities that I've had to be able to travel with my rugby. I see that there's this kind of barrier to entry, or this glass ceiling between the second tier, second, third tiers of rugby and the top level of rugby that is going to be hard to break through, I think. But it looks like maybe World Rugby is going in the right direction with the law change around, especially around the Pacific Island teams, possibly lending a hand to their quality of rugby, allowing guys of a high level to go back and play for the nations. Do you see anything else from the top levels, so the world rugby, that those kind of institutions that's helping out in those areas? Tier two nations, it could be Tonga, but it could be Spain, as you well know.
Mm. Yeah. I think specifically with sort of the Pacifica teams, I think having these two teams, the two latest additions to the Super Rugby has been massive for Pacifica Rugby, and sort of creating those pathways from club to country, and you know, guys that are putting their hands up for those teams know that that's a way that they can sort of get through to. But I still think, like, I love Moana Pacifica and I love everything that's happening there, but I still think there's a lot that can be done to, I guess, build capability actually in the Pacific Islands, and players that are local players. Because no, don't get me wrong, like I said, like having Moana Pacifica, having players that are sort of born, you know, we're in New Zealand here, local, you know, players here coming onto this team, and they're making themselves available, but we're still missing that sort of local component. Like Fiji are doing it well, you know, they've got a lot of local guys that they're sort of bringing to the table, but we sort of, I feel that, you know, Moana Pacifica being based in New Zealand, and it looks like it's still going to be based here for the next couple of years, we're missing that real connection to both Tonga and Samoa. And so I still think there's lots that can be done, but it's a step in the right direction, and it's something that, you know, that is building capacity with regards to players that are, you know, able to represent Tonga Samoa.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think there's a bit of a similar story in, I'll just go back to Spain and other tier two nations. It's that it's focusing rugby at that base level, getting the young kids up to scratch, getting coaches in, great coaches in to form a good youth setup. I think that's what lacks. Guys or federations want to get straight to the end product, I guess.
Absolutely.
The commercial product, which is great, don't get me wrong, but you know, at the same time, I think if they go in there and try and grow that the base of all great rugby in that nation. In Spain, I know this is happening slowly but surely. The international team obviously has been going from strength to strength until their recent game against Tonga. But there's a couple of projects going on to get rugby into schools, to get
Nice.
it taught in schools, which has never been the case before, may potentially even have an inter-school rugby league, which has never happened in Spain. School is quite separate here from sport. So the guys that play sport, they're just going after school or in their free time. So it's never been connected. And I think that's such a big thing about certainly the culture I grew up in, the English culture, is having school and rugby and combining the two and being able to do the same going into university, not having to separate studying and playing rugby. It's sort of the two can sync and go hand in hand, and that really helps kids to even just the outlet of being able to play rugby during school time just gives kids that something else to focus on and could
100%.
even be a positive have a positive effect on their studying. I don't
Absolutely.
know. Yeah, cool. So I just want to go back to your journey, and you skipped over a few places there, including France, Italy, and even Japan. What have been some of your favorite places you visited over your time? And tell
Yeah,
us a bit about them.
I guess I've enjoyed aspects of every place that I've sort of, you know, sort of stopped by on. Japan was interesting. It was my sort of first experience abroad. And I was going through this period where I'd sort of, me and my wife now, but at the time she was my girlfriend, would sort of, it was quite long distance, and it was sort of, it was quite a lonely time, to be honest with you. Hey, like I was over there, and I was like, oh wow, this, you know, I'm over here, you know, earning a bit of coin, and like it was a city of maybe, I think maybe 5 million, down in the south of Japan, called Fukuoka. But I was right at the top of my apartment, overlooking the city. But it was quite a lonely time, sort of missing family and friends. But I enjoyed the food. I remember going to training, and then I'd often just choose a restaurant. I'd go down there and just sit there listening to music, eating my ramen noodles. But there were other families there that did support me in my journeys, in my journey there. But I do remember looking back. I think if I came back at a later point, maybe where things weren't so quite, you know, emotional, and that, I think I would have really, really enjoyed Japan. But I remember that time was particularly quite a, just a, you know, a lonesome time. I enjoyed, obviously, Italy. Love the food there. You know, friendly dudes. You know, good. You know, good bunch of guys. Same as France. I didn't realize how. So coming from New Zealand, I think we're quite, you know, we're rugby fanatics. But I didn't realize that there were places like France and that were just full on rugby as well. And even obviously, you know, traveling over to UK and Wales, and just like there are some places that are just like, okay, they're just as nuts for rugby as we are down here. And so yeah, enjoyed France, enjoyed the food there. My daughter was born there, so it's always a special place. My son was born in Italy. Once we did a year there after we left Jersey. But obviously Jersey, UK was nice. It was nice to go to the UK and be able to speak English after having lived in places that didn't speak. It was like, oh, this is nice. We won't have to, you know, get people to come and help us go to the bank or go, you know, do certain things. But yeah, so I sort of enjoyed bits and pieces, different aspects of each place.
Yeah, how good. I guess you've pointed out the differences between traveling on your own and traveling with a family. Having that support network and everything, I guess, makes things so much easier. I'm not sure. Maybe it's a country like Japan is is much harder to do on your own. It was probably an easier move, same time zone or similar time zone and stuff for you from having been in New Zealand. But I imagine had you have gone to Europe first, even despite the distance and the time zone, you might have had a kind of
100%.
less difficult time. Would you agree?
Abrupt time, yeah, absolutely. I've thought that my mum. I've thought about that before, and I was like, yeah, no, because it's obviously, it's a similar type, but Japan is a very, just a completely different, setup, Yeah, but no, absolutely agree.
Yeah, and you mentioned your son's born in Italy. My son is also born in Italy, so I'm not sure if that was tactical or not, but obviously due to current world rugby laws, they might end up playing for Italy together one day. Who knows?
Imagine that's, yeah, that's crazy. Oh,
Did you
wow.
think about that before your son was
No, I
born,
didn't.
or?
No. It was just, yeah, it was just there. We were obviously, Stacey was pregnant while we were in Jersey, but then we ended up having Elijah when we were in Italy. But yeah, I've never actually thought about that. That might be obviously something that'll come up later on in the, oh, interesting. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's so funny. But yeah, I guess with that ruling, I know it's Italy, you can't actually gain nationality in Italy or a passport in Italy unless one of your parents is Italian. Whereas other countries, I
Wow.
know they do give passports, but World Rugby ruling means that if you're born in a country or you have grandparents that were born in a country, then you qualify for the rugby team.
Wow.
So I guess you can skip the sc some of those strict regulations in a way. But yeah, that's awesome. So France, you mentioned it being one of those places that you just in shock that how much they love their rugby out there, and I experienced it firsthand as well. And I've got to say that nowhere else compares. I think you were in Colomiers in near Toulouse, is that right? That is a hell of a rugby city. They absolutely love it down there. They were obviously champions, or they were in a European Cup final only about 15 years ago, at the top table in the Heineken Cup, and then obviously they moved down to the Pro D2. Were you there when they were in the Pro D2 or in the top 14 at the time?
No, I was there when they were in the Pro D2. I think they just came up from maybe Serie A. And they'd sort of just come back up and back in the Pro D2. But yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed it there, but they were full on. And I was like, man, there's a certain level of, especially being foreigners coming into a place like that and being sort of, billed as this or that, or the highlights is, it's showing me off as this. There's a certain expectation that you have to sort of do that. And if you don't even come, obviously we've seen in the media how, clubs will just tear people down in the media, obviously, Toulon, at the highest level. It's quite fascinating. But I remember sitting there thinking, just wow, they still pause the videos on that and go, hey, oh, and all us foreigners, and they go, oh man, please, because where you're on the field, and if you're on that clip, you're like, oh, and you're sitting there, just take it, you get torn down, you're held to a different sort of level. So, but it is what it is.
Yeah, just to make it clear, you're not talking about like publicly shamed, but maybe in
No.
video analysis meetings
Yeah.
after games, post games, within the team environment. Yes, like you said, I think
Absolutely.
the foreign guys are held to slightly different standards. They're obviously coming into this French rugby culture setup, and there's a lot more expectations put on them, maybe. But yeah, they're reducing the amount of foreign players allowed
Oh,
in
wow.
these French leagues. I know that the JIFF, as JIFF, relates to the number of foreign players you're allowed in a team. And I know when I left France, it just reduced from 8 to 7 foreign players in a match day 23, and I think it's reduced even more. And I think France is at that stage where it has invested so much in its youth and its categories, sort of younger categories, that it can start doing that now. And I've talked about it before on the
Absolutely.
pod about these cycles that countries go through, and I'm from first-hand experience in Italy and Spain. I've been in Spain when there's been no limits on foreign players, but also at times when they've reduced the amount of foreign players per team to 4. The same goes for Italy. They're reducing the amount of foreign players. But I think this is a works in cycles. I don't know if you've seen that in your time, where countries sort of get focused on that idea of giving their youth an opportunity and bringing those guys through. So as that happens, they reduce the amount of foreign players. Then they realize they don't necessarily have the quality in those young players to fill up those first team places. So then they end up increasing the quota again and allowing some more foreign guys in, more foreign coaches and stuff. So I feel like it's this like kind of never-ending cycle of increasing and decreasing those quotas. But it's an interesting case for France at least. I know there's a lot of pressure, like you said, when it comes to first teams, especially at the levels like the Pro D2 and top 14 to win at home. I experienced this a couple of times. I don't know if you ever had a were involved in a home loss at Colomiers. It's probably few and far between and quite a rare experience, but I'll tell you what, you don't want to be on the receiving end of a home loss if you're a foreign player as part of a French team. I don't know if you had that any experiences like that.
No, absolutely. It's something you learn very quickly when you're in front. It's like you can't even smile. We can't even laugh and joke at training because it's like, oh, did someone die up in it? But it's I found that very I found that fascinating. And then, like, even the teams that you pick your strongest team for that home, and then if we're playing away in Narbonne or whatever, they just sort of. Yeah, they'll just give everyone a go because they're not too worried about that. But obviously, Narbonne will be fully. But it was quite fascinating that, and it reflects in the international sort of, their French national team. They're big on the sort of that home kind of, but away they're not as as switched on. But they had a good win last night, eh? Goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. 1 point, wasn't it, in the end? Yeah, it's like that home French advantage. We just couldn't put our. I had a couple of British guys in my team when I was out in Béziers, and we just couldn't put our fingers on this French mentality about when you go. Why does the rugby change when you go away from home, do you think, and you're playing at away stadiums? We maybe came to the conclusion that the ref like becomes a bit of a 16th man, and the crowd and the fans, the local fans, become maybe a 17th man. So you're almost playing with a double advantage. I don't know if you worked it out or why it was so different. Like, guys were going into those matches with such a different attitude,
I
and it just
know,
didn't exist.
absolutely.
Where back in I also spent a year playing in New Zealand, and I never saw anything
No.
like that. If anything, guys were getting more up for playing in away matches, you know?
Exactly. No, it was funny. Like, just like you're talking about the refs, it was fascinating. Like, if we'd lost the game, the refs had to be escorted off the field with security. Guys have been throwing stuff off the stadium. I was like, yo, this is wild, man. This is straight wild stuff, man. And so it was just an eye opener. That's when I realized, I was like, okay, maybe these guys love rugby more than we do down in New Zealand, because these guys are, but we all know, French people are quite passionate and they're very. But nah, it was some wild scenes over there.
Yeah, they are. That's true. Just go. I know you've dabbled a little bit in coaching since you stopped playing. Did you move when you moved from Jersey to Italy? Is that where it started with the coaching, or were you still playing then?
Yeah, no, actually, so yeah, when I went to the Italy, then I was sort of player coach, I was player forwards coach, so it was a challenge. I was sitting there trying to use my broken Italian to talk to these guys, and I'd often start in Italian in my broken Italian, and then I'd just be finishing the session just swearing straight at them in English. It was like, oh, but no, it was enjoyable, and I learned a lot, and it challenged me. I came back to New Zealand, and I did a bit of coaching here too. I coached the team I played for here over 100 games for, so. The guys that were coaching the team at the time were guys that I'd actually played with, so it was kind of nice. Like, oh yeah, I'll jump on board, and it was a way for me to sort of slide out of the sort of professional rugby kind of atmosphere without having to play. I didn't have any notion to play, so it was quite helpful in terms of just sort of transitioning me out. But I ended up coaching sort of the Otago B team, the Otago NPC B team, the forwards the first 2 years I got back, and so I went straight in, and they just. I was coaching nonstop, and I remember thinking, this is full on. Okay, coaching is quite full on. It was sort of being on the other side of things. It was a little bit different. But now this particular year I stepped down. But the year I stepped down, my club actually ended up winning the whole thing, so it was quite funny. But it was. But coaching has been nice in terms of helping me sort of just transition out of playing, but you know, pro footy. So
nice. I'm sure they won the league or won the title as a result of your previous work.
Exactly. I tell my old coaches that, I go, man, this is built on the foundations of.
Perfect. I guess you've experienced a lot of different coaching styles, having been abroad myself, the same. Mm. I know that means that when you go to transition from being a player to a coach, you've got a lot of different experiences that you can call on, I guess. Did you find that when you transitioned from playing to coaching, that you were picking stuff out from, you know, different cultures, many different coaches? And did you have any coaches that you particularly looked up to from your time playing?
Yeah, for sure. It's just funny because one of my favorite coaches was actually still coaching at this club. So one of my favorite coaches that I've been under, you know, over my career was actually when I first started at this particular club. So he was still involved. And it was quite funny having him there again as I was sort of starting my coaching journey, because I really enjoyed, I played a lot of games under Barry, and him being there, being able to sort of mentor me throughout this next sort of phase that I was going through, you know, not as a player, but now as a coach. You learn, I guess, what works for you. And I guess you sort of navigate towards, you know, that kind of, you know, sort of what's worked for you. You have a bit of an understanding of what the players are going through, and having that understanding can sort of help, your coaching style. But like I said, when I was in Italy, the same thing when I came back, I was sort of coaching just sort of stretched me in different ways, and it really challenged me, and just sort of, you know, personal development. But, you know, a lot of being able to stand up in front of a group and deliver and, you know, really trying to communicate. It was good. I really enjoyed it. But I tell you, I think coaching wasn't for me. I think I realized, and even more so now that I've set the way for a year, it's that coaching is like, nah, it's not, I'm not really there. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed my time there, but I don't want to be a, you know, super rugby coach or anything. I don't want to sort of progress. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to at least have tried it so that you can come to that realization and move on, I guess, with the path, that the chosen path. I wanted to ask, in Italy, you mentioned the language, and France, these places, they speak foreign languages. How was that experience? Did you manage to pick up any or add any strings to the bow with regards to the languages?
Yeah, no, I speak Tongan, so I guess languages is sort of having another language is always something that's been, you know, sort of normal to be. But I guess going through and picking up, I'd sort of pick up enough of, you know, just, I guess, try to get by, and then it'll be sort of, you know, move on to the next sort of, you know. But I guess learning the language, you sort of pick up the rugby sort of terminology pretty quick, because you're just in that sort of, I found that's what I picked up quickly, you know, lineouts, you know, scrums, numbers, plays. And then the other thing I actually found out that I was, could do pretty quickly was learning how to order McDonald's in a different language. So it was always, I always found that I was like, man, I can, because I remember standing there showing my mate when I was in Japan, I was like, check this out. And I was like, well, you know, ordering in Japanese, you know, it was, and then I found when I was in Italy, I was able to do that with, you know, quite confidently, same in France. And I was like, man, watch this, man, I got this. And so I always knew that my rugby knowledge and vocab was always going to be up, and being able to order McDonald's in that language is always, so that came quickly too.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, strings to the bow, being able to order McDonald's in multiple cultures. I think that's one of the keys. Yeah. We haven't mentioned your playing position, but I knew you as a second row / six. Was that where you played throughout your career? What was your preferred position?
Yeah, I guess I was second row mainly. I'd often, you know, fantasize about being a six or eight, but I don't think I had, you know, the real, you know, speed or the, you know, and so I guess I was, because I wasn't that tall, and I guess it's something that I was.
Willie, you're pretty quick. I remember off the base of a ruck. You often snipe through there, number of occasions. I remember.
Yeah, true. Nah, that's true. I'd have my moments if I was. had a couple of caffeine shots before the game. But no, I guess yeah, playing lock throughout my career was mainly what I was. You know, I wasn't really, but I wasn't overly tall, and I guess I've always been proud, like saying, yeah, I played at the international level. But you know, the shortest, I had this guy that was a pretty short lock here too. Oh, but you remember Tom Quarry? We always joke about him being, he's quite a short lock too. So being a the short lock club, you know, was something that he sort of just, you know, he was proud of. But yeah, no, mainly played played in the second row over my career. Yeah.
And have you got any stories from your travels? Anything that pops to mind? Any funny anecdotes or anything that you could off the top of your head?
Oh, mate, it's an
If
interesting.
not, I know I've not prepared you for that. I've sprung that on you there. That's probably harsh. And who's the strongest guy you've seen on your travels? Obviously, you've represented Tonga's international team, so there are some pretty strong guys in that team, I imagine. But we always get that question in on
Oh,
social media about, yeah, make sure you ask him who's the strongest guy he's played with? What was he lifting in the gym? What was he squatting? What was he benching?
Wow. Okay. I think maybe the strongest player that I played with, Alessandro Tuilagi up in Newcastle. He was there with his brother Andy. He's a strong back. But I think that there's, I don't know if you guys are familiar with a guy called Opeti Fonua. So he's a big boy, big Tonga number eight that played. I think he might still be in France, but big Tonga number eight. I think he's sort of made the size of myself, but he was like maybe 142 odd kegs. I think there's a clip, if you type in Opeti Fonua into Google, there's a clip there of him running over Johnny Wilkinson. But he was a monster, and I remember watching all these clips of him, and then I remember pulling up to Tonga camp, and he was in the team, and I remember going, oh snap, this monster here. And I remember we had a weigh in at breakfast, and I remember I was just curious. I was just like, so I sort of just hovering around him as he sort of came up to weigh, and he jumped on there, and I saw like 146 or something. I remember going, oh my gosh, this guy is gonna have to do some extras. But yeah, he's a big boy, and yeah, there's a whole array of highlights of him just absolutely monstering guys. But he had really small feet, which is another thing. I've roomed with him a couple of times. He was this giant of a man, but then he had like size 10 feet. It was just real, like, I just, yeah. And so, but yeah,
Yeah,
he was a beast of a man.
sounds like as a 10, my worst nightmare, honestly. I remember my first game in New Zealand. I was playing in a friendly in the Wellington League, at club level, of course. And I got my first little sniff of Prem's rugby there, and they put me straight into the deep end. I came on at 10 in a pre-season friendly, and I've looked up and there's this massive Pacific Islander number 8. I can't remember his name, but he was a big lad, and I don't think he weighed 140 kg, but I think at least 120, and I was only 19 at the time. So it was the first time I've faced a big Pacific Island number 8.
Monster.
Anyway, I thought, you know, I'm young. I had no fear at the time, and I thought, I'll take him. He's gonna grind down my channel. I'll take him. I'll go and get him, and no fear. I've gone to smash him. He's picked the ball up off the base down the blind side. I've gone to smash him, and knee straight in the temple. I think I got the full 125 kilos of his force through my head, and I literally came around in the change rooms after. Apparently, I'd played the last 15 minutes of the game with no recollection. You know, at the time in New Zealand, this was maybe 13 years ago. They already had all these concussion policies in place, so I had to sit out for 3 weeks, etc., etc. But hell of a first experience. That was my first game in
Wow.
New Zealand.
Welcome to New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Blackout. But no, it was fun. It was a fun experience.
Oh, goodness.
Willie, just wanted to ask you your plans for the future and what's next for Pacific Juice? What's next for yourself? Are you thinking about traveling back overseas again with your rugby projects? I'm aware it won't be coaching now, but in another capacity, maybe. Ambassador.
Yeah, ambassador. No, I think with Pacific Juice, yeah, we've got a few things that's sort of in the pipeline. Obviously, I touched on those before with Tonga. We're looking to sort of support them in a little bit more of a meaningful way. They run camps over there every sort of couple of months, and I'm sort of probably going to head over there and get on the ground there, touch base with those guys, and sort of get involved with the kids that they're coaching. And so, and then we've got other ideas. I'm looking at maybe different things. I'm running here, going to run here in New Zealand as well. Sort of some academies, some workshops. Etc. And so just looking to grow Pacific Juice and sort of get us a few of those initiatives ticked off.
Awesome. If you had any advice for young guys thinking about or weighing up their options, maybe that they've not got opportunities going for them at home, but there could be some stuff abroad. I know from our experience that was certainly the case. Those moments where you've got decisions to make, what would you advise?
Oh, absolutely. I have this. I've just had this discussion yesterday, and I have it a lot with players that are maybe umming and ahhing. Obviously, I've coached a few. I coached a bit here in New Zealand, and I'm always encouraging guys to head overseas and take up opportunities because it's good for them. You know, it's good for them to travel, see the world, do something you love. And so for myself, you know, I'm always encouraging, and I would encourage anyone who's thinking about doing that to head over, take, you know, I mean, you know, especially when obviously you're only young once, and being able to do that while you still can before, you know, the next chapter of your life sort of kicks off. But I would absolutely encourage people to take up opportunities to head overseas and sort of see what the world, now that obviously COVID's all sort of somewhat suppressed, it's a great time to sort of, you know, kick on with that.
Maybe not Japan as a first option, though,
Yeah, maybe not Japan if you got your loved ones still back in. Yeah, no, it's funny. We'll talk about that time where for a lot and sort of I used to pick up the phone and she knew, you know, what was going on. And so going, we were just here, but hey, things worked out in the end.
Yeah, nicely done. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, mate. I think a lot of young guys, I'm not sure that they're aware of these opportunities all over the world. Like you said, it was a shock to the system to see that there was such passion for the game in these spots that are so far away from home.
Absolutely.
But I mean, if you kind of like get the courage and pack your bags and get out there, you never know, you never know. All the experiences that you have abroad are absolutely invaluable when it comes into your
Absolutely.
life post rugby, all the contacts you make and etc.
Absolutely.
Such is the reason why you're appearing on the Rugby Abroad
Exactly, exactly,
podcast, eh?
exactly.
Well, listen, Willie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the pod. I really appreciate your time, mate. I know you're a busy guy with all your stuff that you got going on, so massively appreciated your time. You've been class, honestly. Thanks for sharing your experiences, and hope to speak to you soon, mate.
Absolutely. Thanks, Cathy, for having me. No, it's been, you know, been a minute. I'm trying to get this sorted, but no, it's enjoyable, and I'm always up to chat about my our journeys overseas and playing abroad. Good times.
Awesome. Thanks, Willie. Speak to you soon, brother.
Take care, mate.
Thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And to listen to all our episodes and much, much more, visit us at rugbyabroad.com.